Well, sometimes it can seem almost impossible to replace our traditional sources of energy with more green alternatives. But the fact is, we need to be investing in the innovative research that's happening in labs around our state, around the nation, for that matter, if we want to be able to meet our future energy needs without doing total damage to Mother Nature. We always enjoy getting updates from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center at the Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Energy Institute at the University of Wisconsin Madison. They do a lot of really good work. And today we're joined by Steve Slater, who is the science programs manager for the for the GLBRC, Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And Steve, great to have you back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Appreciate it very much. With us as well is Jeremy Luderbacher, who is with a postdoc work, a researcher in the lab of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, professor of chemical and biological engineering, James Domesic. Jeremy recently published a very high profile, I think, you could say, and a very innovative paper in the journal Science about sugar production from biomass. And I think it really has some exciting implications for bioenergy. And Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you both being with us today. You may have some questions as you listen in today. Are you interested in bioenergy? Would you like to be the first in line to use it in your car or for some other energy uses? Maybe you'd be willing to pay for more power if you knew it was coming from a more environmentally friendly source. Love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page and post there at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Steve, first to you, when we're talking about biomass, what really are we talking about here? What do we mean by it?
So biomass is really all of the plant cell wall material that that is produced by everything from grass to trees to the residues of crops, corn stover, for example, the leftover stalks and leaves from corn plant after we harvest and cart away the grain. Anything that is plant material is really the beginning of what we would consider to be biomass, particularly in the context in which we use it. The center focuses on producing fuels from cellulosic biomass. So that really means the cellulose and associated other types of polymers in the cell walls of plants.
Yeah, and have been doing that now for how many years? You just got started.
We're launching into our seventh year now.
Is it? Oh, my goodness.
We had an initial five-year grant. It was just renewed a while back, and we're into our second 5 years at this point. So it's been a good ride.
It's gone pretty fast. I can remember interviewing some of the original parties on the grand opening. So ever since, we've been really talking. Every other month or so, somebody has come in. Folks have come in to talk about the research that's been going on there, and some pretty exciting stuff. And Jeremy, tell us specifically what your area of research is.
Well, I work on trying to break down those plants and do a targeted upgrade of them. So target certain molecules that can be useful either as fuels, but also as chemicals that can replace the petrochemicals that we usually get from oil in the ground. And when you think about it, there's a lot of things that you use in your daily life that are made from oil, and it would be nice if we could transition to things that are made from plant material, but to do that, we need targeted upgrading pathways.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking around. Probably some of the clothes we're wearing, the headphones that we have on, mm-hmm. the microphones that are in front of us, and a whole lot more all come from oil primarily.
Exactly, yeah. And to get to sort of upgrade, to transform plants into not only fuels but all these other molecules, what you need is the first thing you need to do is break them down to something that you can actually convert. And as Steve was mentioning, plants are mostly a large portion of the plant mass are these polymers or just chains of sugars. And fortunately, if you can get to the sugars, we know how to do a lot of things with sugars. We've known how to convert them to things like ethanol or beer, you know, mm-hmm. for thousands of years. And more recently, we've figured out chemical transformations that we can do from sugars to all kinds of interesting and useful molecules. But it's actually quite tricky to break down those chains to individual molecules. So that's what I work on, so to the individual sugars.
Yeah, well, and you look at, you know, tree bark or a tree branches mm-hmm. or, gosh, something like that. It's, yeah, turning that into sugar is...
I mean, plant cell walls have evolved to be tough. They are there to provide structural integrity to the plant, to keep it upright, and to, in some ways, to help resist pests that might want to attack the plant. Mm-hmm. They have evolved to be very, very tough structures, and that's what makes it tough on our end to try to break those down. You know, imagine trying to break down wood, and you understand exactly what it is we're up against. It's not a soft, pliable material. It's tough stuff. And finding ways to break it down in a way that doesn't use more energy than we're going to get out is a difficult thing.
Well, that's the other trick. I mean, you right. know, obviously it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to spend more energy to produce, to spend $10 worth of energy to produce $1
exactly.
worth of energy.
And that's been one of the traditional knocks on ethanol derived from cornstarch. Not only is it the fact that it's corn grain that's going into it, but the energy return has been certainly in the past. The estimates have been it's been pretty much break even. We actually do get a little bit more energy out than we put in, but it's not great. There's definitely room for improvement.
Let's take some calls again. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. I hope you'll join us with your comments or with your questions. We'll turn to Madeline in Waupaca first. Madeline, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm opposed to using the Earth's topsoil for anything other than food. I think that when we use it for fuel, that we're going to drive up the cost of food, and there's already a lot of people who don't have food.
Yeah. I thank you for calling. We'll get comments from both. Maybe Steve, start with you.
She's got an excellent point. This is one of the major things that we are concerned about within the center. We have a large group that focuses on sustainability of fuel synthesis, and we spend a lot of time thinking about how can we make these fuels, how can we generate biomass in a way that is sustainable, mm-hmm. so that we're not... we're not replacing food with biomass crops, for example. And you know, some of that happens now. If you think about corn grain, there's lots of markets it could go into. You know, the point about using things that could potentially go as food as fuel, it's a good point. But I think most people would agree that the issue with food distribution, although it's clearly a major issue, less a technology issue than an economic issue.
Yeah.
But we try to look at it from all of those angles, and we try to find ways that we can use the same land to generate biomass that can be used in multiple ways, from food to fuel.
Yeah. Jeremy, comment?
Yeah, I'd actually make two comments on that. The first is that one of the misunderstandings that people often have about this debate is that in, at least in the United States, the vast majority of our croplands are actually not made to make food for humans. They're mostly, the majority of our croplands are used to make food for animals. So it's really, if you were to displace some crops, you would be displacing feed crops for animals. So that's the first point. That could be solved by eating less meat as opposed to driving up food prices. The second point I would make is that by targeting cellulosic plants as opposed to these starchy plants, we actually have a little bit more flexibility in the land we can use. It's usually easier to plant things like fast-growing poplar, things like that, than prairie grass on marginal lands that farmers really don't want to use For food production.
For food production.
And the marginal land point is a really important one. Marginal lands, there's lots of different ways to look at it, but they're basically lands that would not otherwise be used for growing food. But if you are producing biomass crops, particularly perennial biomass crops, so you're not plowing the land every year, things like switchgrass or willows or things like that, you're not disrupting the land. You're using land that would not otherwise be in production, and you can take some amount of biomass off there. And it's really the focus of our sustainability group is to understand what are appropriate crops, how much can we take off and still remain sustainable.
Yeah. Boy, lots of good things to talk about and some good callers online. And I hope you folks will stay with us as we visit with our two guests today, Steve Slater, who is the science program manager for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. We always call it the GLBRC. And also Jeremy Luderbacher, who is a postdoc researcher in the lab of UW-Madison Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering, James Domesic, and is really doing some cool and very high-profile work in this whole area of bioenergy. And we're going to learn more about that right after we take a look at the news. You stay with us. The University of Wisconsin is a leader in many fields, and bioenergy and green technology certainly no exception. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Always exciting to hear about what's going on at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. And today we're joined by Steve Slater, who is the Science Programs Manager for GLBRC. Steve, thanks for coming back again. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me back.
And also with us, Jeremy Luderbacher. He is a postdoc researcher in the lab of Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering, James Domesic. He recently published a very high-profile and innovative paper in the journal Science about sugar production from biomass, and really has some exciting implications for bioenergy. And Jeremy, great to have you with us today as well. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
We haven't gotten into the specifics of his research, but maybe give us a thumbnail of again here as we start this portion of your work and what you're really doing.
Yeah, so as we were talking about before, it plants are mostly made of these chains of sugars, and it can be quite difficult to break down those chains into the individual sugars, because that's what we want, because we know how to convert those. So it can be a very useful intermediate on the road to producing fuels and chemicals from plants. And because it's been so difficult in the past to break down those chains, people have used either expensive chemicals or expensive or complicated biochemicals to break these plants down. So they've used things like pure concentrated acids, or they've used things, a two-step process where they'll use some acid to open up the plant and then add an enzyme, a biochemical, to break down the sugars. And what we've discovered is that by using this molecule that we call gamma-valerolactone, we'll call it GVL because it's easier, which is actually a molecule that you can produce from the plant itself. And by using that as a solvent, we found that we can really facilitate this breakdown and use only a tiny little bit of acid. So we think it's kind of an exciting new way of doing this this type of work.
It really sounds wonderful. It's going to be a lot of cheaper, number one, but I mean also environmentally, I think it's got to be much better.
Well, it has some advantages, and I think the main point I would make is it's a new way. If there's a process that's this important and that there's only four or five ways of doing it, adding another road on the path to converting plants to fuels and chemicals is important. And what's really nice and holistic about this is that the chemical we're using can be produced by the plant itself. Wow. So that's exciting.
Gordy in Eau Claire has a question. Gordy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
I've listened to your show many times regarding the biomass research project, but I don't ever seem to hear the discussion about the rest of the fuel that some of us use, which is diesel. I've been using biodiesel in the summer, warm months, obviously not during weather right now, for about 8 or 9 years. And my understanding is it's mostly soybean, although some animal fat is actually rendered to make it. But is it possible, I mean, is the research project looking into biodiesel options?
Okay.
Yeah. So we do have a couple of projects within the center that are looking at oils. Our primary mission, as directed by our funder, the Department of Energy, is to look at breaking down cellulosic material. But we do have work on oils, and the main goal of that eventually is to try to produce oil in the vegetative tissues of plants. Right now, soybean oil comes from the bean. The soybean plants or other plants don't really make very much oil in their leaves or their stalks. And so one of the foci is to try to produce significant amounts of oil in that vegetative material, the leaves and stalks of plants. By doing that, we think we may be able to significantly increase the amount of oil that would be available and not have to be taking it from the beans. We also have some projects that are modifying the structure of the oils. One in particular made an oil called acetyl triacylglycerol that doesn't need to be converted into biodiesel the way that soybean oil now needs to be converted through a chemical process to make it useful. Acetyl triacylglycerol actually can be used as a heavy diesel directly out of the plant. And that's also some work from within the center, actually primarily done by a group of ours that is over at Michigan State University.
Uh-huh. There we go. Thanks, Gordy. Appreciate the call. And Susan in Beaver Dam, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for the research. I think it's fantastic. However, right now, you know, we do have corn-based ethanol, and the latest research shows you get a lot, you know, it's about a 2-to-1 conversion. And also, I'd like to point out that a lot of people are misinformed that all the corn goes into the process. Well, the only thing they use in the process is the starch, and also they use the oil for the biodiesel, and the rest is left over as dry distiller's grain. And so could you comment toward that more? I think your research is wonderful, and I hope you find another alternative, such as switchgrass or whatever. But for right now, I think corn-based ethanol is the way to go. And any comments on that?
All right. Thanks, Susan. Let's hear from Steve first.
So she's absolutely right that it's the starch that is used to be converted into the ethanol. The starch is taken apart in the same way that Jeremy was talking about taking apart cellulose and to yield individual glucose sugars, which are then fermented. The oil can be collected and used for other things. And then it's true that what's left over is dry distiller's grains. So in addition to that, there's all the other corn stover, the residual biomass, the rest of the corn plant, basically, that can potentially be used through the types of process that Jeremy's been talking about in order to make cellulosic ethanol. So she's right. We need to use as much of the plant as we can, as long as it's done so in a way that's sustainable and maintains the soil quality and fertility. But thinking about that holistic approach is absolutely the way we try to think about these things.
Yeah. Jeremy, come in.
Yeah, so that's exactly what our process addresses. It addresses converting not the starch, which is fairly easy to get sugar out of. That's why we eat it. But these cellulosic sugar chains. And once we get that, again, we can make ethanol, but our process can also take those to non-ethanol type fuels. We know how to chemically convert our sugars to gasoline and diesel type fuels as well.
Directly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to, you could have switchgrass and you could have tree branches and other products, cellulosic products, and dump them together and come up with something?
That's correct. One of the unique aspects of using our process, at least compared to the processes that use enzymes, is that basically our technology is feed agnostic. It can take anything and get more or less the same results. We can take hardwood, softwood, grasses, corn stover. We get virtually the same yields. So as long as it's a cellulosic plant, we can convert it.
Okay. Susan, thank you. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments or email us at talk@WPR.org. Talking about sugar production from biomass and the research that's going on at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center with Jeremy Ludebacher, who's a postdoc researcher there, and Steve Slater, who is the programs manager, science program manager at GLBRC. Great to have them here, and thank you so much for listening in. Jason in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hi there. I was just wondering, I had a question for your guests. I read last week about potential research into a sugar-based battery that uses circulating enzymes to pull electricity out of it. Rechargeable and potential to outperform lithium ion. Just wondering if they had any thoughts on that.
Oh, well,
I'd love to give you something intelligent, but I have actually have not read the paper, so I can't.
It sounds
comment.
Great.
Yeah.
It really sounds good. But Jeremy, have you heard anything about it?
There are some processes that are looking at biological ways of producing electricity, but those are sort of at the very early stage. It's one of those technologies that's exciting, that's kind of wacky. It could yield to great results, but it's probably it's not close to being ready yet.
But I mean, it is a nice example of how biological materials are being applied in many other areas that where we would typically think of applications of more things like minerals and those sorts of things. There's a tremendous amount that can be done with biological materials.
You know, I forgot to bring this up earlier, but if you go to my Facebook page as you listen in here, go to my Facebook page because got another story, article about the research that we're discussing today and that Jeremy's involved in. And also, there's a cool little video that you can click on and the process is described and sort of you get a look at it, too. You get a little visual as you're watching. And so just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You don't have to be a member of Facebook to get to it and take a look. And Rick and Viroqua, on to you. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I work in the fertilizer industry and test a lot of soil. One of the problems with corn production these days is the organic matter is getting so low in the soil because it's just corn on corn. So if you're taking all the stover off and all the grain, I mean, what is going to feed the soil microbes? I mean, it's not, you have to add so many inputs to make, you know, to get a crop, and if you take everything off.
Yeah, that's something I'd certainly have considered, Steve.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and it's really one of the major things that our sustainability researchers are looking at. The types of crops grown, the types of soils, and the particular rotations matter a lot in terms of what you can take off and how much of it. And so he raises one of the central issues with which we are concerned at GLBRC. What can we take off in terms of biomass sustainably and still maintain the quality of that agricultural land? We do have a group that's devoted to those sorts of questions, and if you go to the GLBRC website, you can get a link that describes a lot of that type of research. Absolutely important. Inputs in terms of the whole life cycle of the entire process, inputs into the growing the biomass are a critical piece of the equation.
Yeah. Comment, Jeremy?
Yeah. One of the interesting things is that when you move to perennial plants, as opposed to these food crops that are usually have to be planted every year, you can play interesting tricks. You can, for example, you can cut your plant in the winter months when the nutrients tend to be back in the root. So you leave a lot of the nutrients behind and use less fertilizer and things like that. So it's like Steve says, it's something that's on our minds, and there's ways to make the whole process a lot better. So we absolutely have to develop something that is sustainable.
That issue, yeah.
Yep. But I think there's ways of doing so.
Yeah. Gavin in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I just had a question about whether any of the experts had been looking into Mark Shepard's work up in the Driftless area, not so much for energy production, but for food production with perennials, or Ben Falk's work out in Vermont. They retain topsoil or regenerate topsoil via perennial crops, like trees. And I think they're having a problem spilling the difference. You know, you only have to plant a tree.
Not you're breaking up. I'm sorry, Gavin, you're breaking up here, but did we get enough there?
I think so. I don't know about you, Jeremy. I'm not familiar with the specific work that he talks about, but this point about perennial crops is a very important one, and it's one that our sustainability researchers put at the center of our thinking about what crops can be used for biomass. And they did this fairly early on. As Jeremy was saying, the perenniality of the crop is a big issue because you don't have to be continually plowing the soil, and that means that you're not having to go over that same land every year with burning diesel with the tractors, et cetera. And there are a lot of other potential advantages of it. I think the thing to do is next time we'll make sure we get one of our sustainability researchers in here to speak with you.
Yeah, that would,
because we spend a lot of time thinking about these issues.
And I don't think we've really touched on that, at least for a long time. So, yeah. I mean, it always kind of comes up, or often comes up in the conversation, but we haven't had anyone on who's been actually, that's been that specific.
Yeah, we'll make sure we remedy that.
And Gavin, thanks again. Stephen in Kenosha, hello, thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering if the sugars that the cellulose is broken down to can be converted to starch or other things that are edible for livestock or people.
Mm-hmm. So the work that you're doing, Jeremy, you're not creating sugars, are you? Are you creating?
Yes, yes.
You're creating sugars.
We're basically making sugars, and if you do decide to make ethanol, which is by far not the only thing we can make from sugars, but if you do decide to make ethanol, what you're basically doing is you're making probably really bad tasting beer. But it's the same kind of thing where you're not focusing on taste, but just on making as much alcohol as possible. And so given that there's actually a lot of sugar that's being produced for food or feed, as I mentioned, feed for animals before, that we're producing so much that a portion of it is actually going to make ethanol right now. So I think that rather than trying to produce food from cellulosic plants, what we want to be doing is try to produce fuel from cellulosic plants and produce and have the starch plants go back to being 100% feed or food.
Okay, there we go. But I do note that many of the researchers in this area seem to have an interest in beer as well. Mm-hmm. As an aside.
Yeah, that's true. That's often where we get our best ideas, is chatting over a beer.
It's probably because we're mostly students, too.
Jane and Sherwood, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm wondering, have you considered using hemp rather than corn?
Mm-hmm. Hemp.
We certainly can use it. I mean, like I said, our process is any type of lignocellulosic plant, which includes hemp, can be used in our process. So we focused on making something that could be used for any plant. So no problem. Whatever lignocellulosic plant is given to us, we can convert.
Yeah.
From our point of view, we'd go back to what biomass can be produced in the most sustainable manner and harvested and transported in a way that gives you an overall greenest life cycle for the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
That would be how we'd evaluate what the feedstock would be.
You wouldn't be using or zeroing in on something like tobacco plants, for example, or plants that suck the nitrogen out of the soil.
Yeah, just the opposite. We would really like to be using plants that are putting nitrogen back into the soil.
But we don't want to give the impression that there's one type mm-hmm. of plant for the whole country. You know, right. it might depend on the region. It might depend on what you're planning for food as well, because we can use some of the residues of those processes. So it really, it's you want to have a technology that's flexible, because there's going to be different answers for different areas, different climates, different parts of the country.
Well, one of the things I like about your research is that this could be applied, even though the plants or whatever are different across the country, the process itself could be applied, if it's cactus or what, you know, what, or northern Wisconsin fir.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's one of the real benefits of your work. And Reed and Weyerhaeuser, you're on next. Hi.
This is Rod. Thanks, Larry. Yeah, I was just wondering, this isn't really about the production of crops. It's in the chain of it, definitely. I have to wonder, all this waste, you know, human waste, animal waste, you know, and here, for example, like at the landfill up here, Weyerhaeuser, Bruce area, waste management, they're now capturing the methane gas, you know, from it. So, I mean, you're getting methane gas from so many different things, and it's like, for instance, Chicago, I got relatives used to go down there. You can always smell that over the sanitary canal, and I just keep thinking to myself, you know, there's got to be some way of containing that, and if they're ever doing footwork on that, because, I mean, it's like we're just wasting.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's been a big push in Wisconsin, particularly associated with the dairy industry, to have manure digesters to produce gas, and there are farms that are heating their barns and running parts of their operation off that. It's definitely an area of active research, and some definitely already have started to use it on farms.
And it seems like just sort of as we wind up here in the last minute or so, that this is not going to be sort of a center that's feeding the entire United States, for example. It's going to be a lot of probably smaller operations within states, or even smaller than that, communities almost producing this product.
That's correct. You don't want to be trucking plants all over
the
country.
Point.
Yeah. So you're limited by how much energy you want to use to transport plant matter a certain distance. So, and the way that works out is that you're limited in size, so it's probably going to be fairly regional centers. But we're also working on ways to densify the plant, sort of have an intermediate, densify it, and then maybe transport it a little farther. So that's research that's ongoing at the center, too.
Yeah.
And that potentially adds to rural economies as well, because you create some smaller local businesses associated yeah. with harvesting and processing biomass.
Boy, with that, we're out of time. Jeremy, Steve, thank you so much. I feel like we have a whole lot more that we could be talking about here today, so I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Jeremy Luderbacher, a postdoc researcher in the UW-Madison. He works with James Domesic, professor in chemical and biological engineering. And Steve Slater, who is the science programs manager for the GLBRC. Please go to my Facebook page. I've got links to the work that they're doing, and some kind of cool video, too, about the work that Jeremy's involved in. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.